Hunter, could I take you back to September the 11th? I mean, what I'd really like to know is your reactions. And I know you said you were writing a sports column for ESPN when the planes hit the towers. But could I get you to tell that story of when you found out about it and what you were doing and what your reaction was?
Yeah, it was really dramatic in a low-key way. I had, in fact, just finished a sports column for ESPN. I forgot exactly what it was about. It was pretty good. And it had no sooner gone over the wire than I was on the phone, John Walsh, general editor of ESPN, was on the phone saying, you have to write about this disaster. And it happened. I had been going to bed after, I guess my column was late, Monday night. I was just going to bed. TV was still on. I usually have it on just for the news. And I happened to see the first plane hit in my fogged condition. You know, I'd been up all night writing a column. I somehow knew it was real. I don't know why I've seen enough real life. What is that noise? Oh, thank you. Yeah, there was no mistaking the reality of that. It didn't make much sense. And it still doesn't really, but here we go. This is a column I wrote, appeared 9/12/01. Here it is. It was just after dawn in Woody Creek, Colorado, when the first plane hit the World Trade Center in New York City on Tuesday morning. And as usual, I was writing about sports, but not for long. Football suddenly seemed irrelevant compared to the scenes of destruction and utter devastation coming out of New York on TV.
You went on to say in that article, which I have in front of me, that even ESPN was broadcasting war news. It was the worst disaster in the history of the United States. Do you think that the event completely transformed the way in which Americans see themselves and their own vulnerability?
No, the event by itself would not have done that. I've seen planes at the Empire State Building before. I didn't go totally out of my mind. People have been killed. But it was the way the administration was able to use that event and to, you know, use it as a springboard for everything they wanted to do. Now, that might tell you something. I remember when I was writing that column, you sort of wonder when something like that happens, well, who stands to benefit? You know, say murder. You know, who had the opportunity and the motive? You just kind of look at these basic things. And I don't know if I want to go into this on worldwide radio here, but...
You may as well.
All right. Well, what the hell? I saw that the U.S. government was going to benefit the White House people, the Republican administration, to take the mind of the public off of the crashing economy. Now, you want to keep in mind that every time a person named Bush gets into office, the nation goes into a drastic recession, they call it.
It sounds almost like the plot of that film Wag the Dog, where film producers sort of concocted a national event to inspire patriotism to take the public's minds off misdemeanors committed by the president. It seems a very long bow to me, but are you sort of suggesting that this worked in the favor of the Bush administration?
Oh, absolutely. And I spent enough time on the inside of, well, the White House and campaigns, and I've known enough of the people who do these things think this way to know that the public version of the news of an event is never really what happened. And these people, I think, are willing to take that even further so that I don't assume that I know the truth about what went on that day. And, yeah, I just look around and looking for, well, who had the motive, who had the opportunity, who had the equipment, who had the will. Yeah, these people were looting the treasury, and they knew the economy was going to go into a spiral downward.
It, from this distance, though, it does seem extraordinarily conspiratorial that you could sit there and see the hand of the U.S. government in this attack rather than seeing international terrorists bent on somehow hurting America and the American people. What sort of reaction did your views get among your peers or amongst other journalists?
Well, it was greeted universally with kind of nervousness and almost nobody agreed with me, but nobody thought it was the right thing. Just to answer your question, no, it was about 99-1. But since then...
Did you publish those views anywhere?
I'm not sure if I said that. If I haven't, I meant to. Let's see.
I was going to ask you, you know, for the reaction to them, because... I mean, I don't want to seem Pollyanna-ish here, but it does seem an extraordinary conspiracy theory that you're putting forward, that your first reaction was to somehow implicate the U.S. government in this attack rather than an enemy of the U.S. government.
Well, you want to keep in mind that I have lived not just through, but very close to a lot of real tragedies in this country. And let me ask you, do you think that you know who killed John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy?
Look, I have to say I was a boy at the time, but no, I haven't read the Warren Commission report. But it seemed to me that in this case there were so many more people involved, it would seem to be much less likely some sort of internal conspiracy.
Well, it does. I mean, I can see where you're a little edgy accepting this for me, and.
Well, let me just ask you on that. I mean, you've pioneered a form of journalism called gonzo journalism, in which it's almost like there's no revision. What you see and feel is what goes down on the page, and it's that first blush, that first image that hits the readership. Does that mean, Hunter S. Thompson, that in a way it's hard for you to appear credible within the U.S. media, because people would say, oh, look, that's just another conspiracy theory from a drug-addled gonzo journalist like Hunter S. Thompson?
Yeah, that's a problem. I'm not sure if it's my problem or other people's or theirs, but I'm looking at this column and the one after it. I've been right so often, and my percentages are so high. I'll stand by this column that I wrote that day and the next one. So what appears to be maybe gonzo journalism, well, I'm not sure where to... I'm not going to claim any, you know, prophetic powers, but...
Well, one of the things you do say in that first article you wrote, you say, it's now 24 hours later, and we're not getting much information about the five W's of this thing. Now, by the five W's, I'm presuming you mean the who, the what, the when, the why, and the how.
Yeah.
Is that still how you feel, that a year later those key questions haven't been answered?
Absolutely. I mean, it's even worse now. I mean, this is just a suggestion. Okay, 24 hours later, we're not getting much information about the five W's. Well, how much have we got beyond that? How much more do we have than we had that a year ago? Damn little, I think. We know a lot about the firemen who died, a lot about the people who stole the money from their charity fund. What about the people who donated all that blood, and Red Cross had too much of it, had to throw away 5 tons of blood, something like that? That may be an exaggeration.
Mm.
But no, I will stand by almost all my... get a grip on yourself, Doc. You talk like that.
Hunter S. Thompson, let me ask you about your new book. I mean, The Kingdom of Fear, Loathsome Secrets of a Star-Crossed Child in the Final Days of the American Dream. It's a very apocalyptic title. Has this book, this new book, has it come off your reflections about September the 11th and the way it was handled by the American media?
Well, it came off of the atmosphere in this country as of September 12th. Yeah, Kingdom of Fear. That's the way I see this country, and that I'm not writing just a long screed, you know, front to back, some kind of a political tract. But in the book, I'm trying to explain a little bit about, you know, how I got this way, and, you know, why you should pay attention to my predictions.
Is this a critical time for the credibility of U.S. journalism? How this current war is being covered and how it's being reported on and the sort of public information that the American people get? Is this a sort of critical test of the credibility of U.S. journalism?
I think definitely. Yeah, but I'm not sure how much credibility U.S. journalism really has, given that five years we lost two presidents and one civil rights leader to mysterious bums and assassins, you know, bushy-haired strangers. And U.S. journalism has never dug out the truth about that. One of my great shames as a journalist is that I still don't know who killed Jack Kennedy. And it's always bothered me. It's always haunted me. And there's no doubt that I don't know. And there's not to doubt that journalism in general does not know. And a lot of ways that may be because maybe we haven't asked. I mean, when I say asked, I mean, the people who, most of the witnesses were killed, weren't they?
But does that need for certainty, it occurs to me that you probably wouldn't hear those sort of comments on many other outlets. In America, in the United States, where would you be in a position to say these things to give voice to your conspiracy theories about the role of the U.S. government? Critical comments such as the ones you've been making.
Where else, eh? Where indeed? And I know a lot of journalists across the country who would agree with me. But now whether they're writing this stuff and saying it in public, I don't know. You could ask Maureen Dowd and see what she feels about whether I'm right or wrong. But I can't really tell you anybody else. Doesn't come to mind. And I usually, it really is lonely out here.
Hunter S. Thompson, just as a final question, and look, it's a big question, but let me ask it anyway. I mean, how do you see, from your position as a critic on the left of American journalism, how do you see the future of journalism in your country?
Well, I have a very dim view of it, I guess. Yeah, the future of journalism, which I really thought was unbounded after Watergate. But right now, there's not a whole lot of reason to be optimistic about it because of the, not just this one huge scam they pulled off here, but because of the everyday reality of journalism is celebrity-driven. The news over here barely covers. I watch the some BBC stuff and then some CNN foreign news, the one that world news that doesn't get into the country. I read the Paris Herald Tribune. That kind of news doesn't get through in this country. Now, you have to read the New York Times very carefully and to maybe see what they're talking about, but I don't think my views would be seen as crazy or absurd or out of the question in most countries of the world.
Do you ever worry, given the current climate in the United States and the surge of patriotism that's going on, that you could be personally at risk from someone who took offence at your critique, that your own personal security might be threatened?
Yeah, think about it. Definitely it could be true. I may be told.
Have there been occurrences when you've been threatened?
Oh, yeah, I'm constantly, I have been all my life, but not, background in journalism, you just have, that goes with the territory. There's going to be threats and there's going to be, people are very unhappy. And knock, knock, it's not, I don't think it's any a matter of luck. It's a matter of, I'm pretty well stuck to my battle plan. And, they tried to come after me. The federal government, all kinds of governments. I've had constant wars in courts. I have to keep like four of the finest criminal lawyers in the country on retainer. Yeah, you have to fight for these rights in this country. They didn't come in on any, the stork didn't bring the Bill of Rights. A lot of people fought for it.
So that's how you'd see yourself, as fighting for freedom of speech in America?
Absolutely.